Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the voters of California who recently rejected a proposed increase in the minimum wage from $16 an hour to $18 an hour, which would have been the most compassionate minimum wage in the country. In fact, I propose we shift our language from calling it a minimum wage or a living wage to calling it a loving wage. Because ultimately, evil corporations who don't really deserve their money in the first place need to be coerced into acting lovingly toward their employees who clearly do deserve that money instead. And yes, in California, there are a variety of loving wages. $20 an hour for fast food workers, $25 an hour for healthcare workers, and six cities who already love all of their citizens enough to pay them at least $18 an hour. What continues to baffle us is why the voters of California would choose not to show such love to the workers of the entire state. It's almost as if they believe the Republican lie that raising the cost of doing business leads to increases in the cost of goods and services sold, such that intervening in the market to make it more just never really works in the long run. What a stupid belief. But seriously, why are the legislators in California setting their sights so low? If $18 an hour is good, surely $20 an hour is better. And if $20 an hour is better, isn't $25 an hour superior to that? And if a loving wage of $25 an hour is superior, why not simply bypass all the silly mechanisms of markets with demand signals and supply constraints and just make the lovingest wage of all $50 an hour or even $100? I mean, if we can simply legislate low-skill workers out of poverty with the stroke of our central planning pens, why go part way? It's not as though earning $200,000 a year in San Francisco or San Diego is a lot of income. And why should people with higher demand skills that require more training and expertise be paid more than everyone else? Why should companies and markets be making these decisions instead of the highly informed California voter, who can simply go into the voting booth and vote herself a big juicy slice of economic justice? Which is more democratic? The democracy of markets that respect private ownership of property and free choices, or the democracy of elections that respect only the will of the masses? We say the latter, and we call on the good people of California and the United States in general to pass a suitably aspirational and benevolent national loving wage. Let's pay everyone a minimum of $250 an hour or $500,000 per year and just sit back and watch the wealthy society manifest itself. Just think how easy it'll be to fill all these menial, unskilled jobs if we pay someone $500,000 a year to be a grocery store stocker or an Amazon warehouse worker or even haul trash for a living. The golden age is just around the corner when all can be free from the tyranny of unjustly low incomes. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, actor Daniel Craig, for his serious transgression recently when answering a simple question during a press conference at the Venice Film Festival. The reporter asked, "Do you think there could be a gay James Bond?" In response, the seventh actor to portray Ian Fleming's womanizing alcoholic spy rolled his eyes and said, "I mean, really?
Do you think there could be a gay James Bond?"
I mean, guys, please, let's be adult in the room for a second.
Thank you. Of course, Daniel Craig's clear deflection of the question with accompanying eye roll indicates the problem. He seems to somehow think it's absurd to even pose the hypothetical, saying, "Thank you," dismissively, after the fair inquiry was dismissed by Luca Guadagnino, the director of Craig's new film Queer, which they were promoting. Now, presumably, Craig reacted that way because he thinks the 007 persona is somehow off-limits to the allures of same-sex attraction. But if James Bond could theoretically be a black man, or a woman, or occasionally at least enjoy a margarita stirred and shaken, then why couldn't he be gay? Why not trans? Why not gender fluid or two-spirit? Perhaps Jasmine Bond will be the next iteration of 007, License to Kill, in those heels. If the holy acronym string can accept anybody, other than straight white men, of course, why not James Bond? But Guadagnino's response here is even worse. Laughing off this question as inappropriate is a serious mistake. It's not a trivial matter to ask whether 007 might not become a force for inclusion. I mean, who wouldn't want to watch James Bond make out with random sexually enticing men instead of the ordinary female prey he seduces?
There is no way around the fact that nobody would ever know James Bond desires, period.
What do you mean we can't know? Of course we can know. The movie series has clearly told us James Bond is a heterosexual philanderer, a playboy of the First Order, a serial anti-monogamist, a libertine, a rake, a Don Juan, a Casanova, a Lothario, the walking embodiment of every 14-year-old boy's libidinous aspirations. But where are little homosexual boys to place their lascivious hopes and dreams without a powerful, capable, witty, charming, gay international spy to represent them?
The important thing is that he does his missions properly. Having said that...
What? So long as they're only missionary missions? How dare you? This is very serious. So for dismissively deciding that however else gay men might find themselves embraced by Hollywood, there's no hope for them in the spy game, Daniel Craig, we hereby convict you of fourth-degree felony sexual intolerance with enhancements for linguistic violence against the people of the rainbow and inadequate reverence for the holy acronym string, and condemn you to something worse than any villain's implausibly complicated punishment. You are hereby banished by the proletariat of public virtue. The outraged masses have spoken. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to praise the fine work done at Dictionary.com this year for selecting demure as their word of the year for 2024. Now remember, the most important thing about the word of the year is that it must do something to disrupt the status quo or make people feel uncomfortable or out of touch. Sometimes the goal is to pick a word that most people have never yet heard of in an effort to gaslight them into doubting their own mastery of the English language. Sometimes the goal is to normalize or mainstream some completely deviant belief or behavior by acting like the word for it is so common already. But in this case, something very different is going on.
See how I do my makeup for work? Very demure, very mindful.
You see, the word demure historically meant someone who was reserved, quiet, or modest. But now, because of the linguistic activism of TikToker Jules LeBron with 2.3 million followers, demure actually means sophisticated or refined.
A lot of you girls go to the interview looking like Marge Simpson and go to the job looking like Patty and Selma, not demure.
Now, through LeBron's tireless efforts, demure has actually come to mean the near opposite of its traditional definition. Although demure was assigned one meaning at its etymological birth, it clearly now identifies as something very different. In other words, demure is trans-definitional, which makes it perfect as a choice for us.
I don't come to work with a green-cut crease. I don't look like a clown when I go to work. I don't do too much. I'm very mindful while I'm at work.
Obviously, we love words that mirror the gender anarchy we so adamantly believe in, because the more words shift, the more words can be used as the litmus test of whether people are properly following their thought leaders in the cultural vanguard of TikTok and other mind-sedating technologies. Remember, our most basic woke principle, change for the sake of change is how we make change itself the only constant. The other nice bonus is how this vocabulary fluid term separates the older from the younger generations, even further isolating young people from their elders who might run the risk of imparting traditions and conservatism to them. So good for you, Dictionary.com. In coordination with the virtue gurus of TikTok and the almighty Chinese algorithm, you have once again facilitated revolution. You were very demure, very mindful.
I'm very modest. I'm very mindful. You see my shirt? Only a little chichi out, not my chocho.
Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Refreshments this week are provided by I Can't Believe It's Not Real, makers of only the finest imaginary food items suitable for all ages and any occasion. Last year, the content creators at I Can't Believe It's Not Real suddenly recognized that all the demands we woke-alites place on food, like it being organic, pesticide-free, conflict-free, justly sourced and shipped only with green technology, make it essentially impossible to ever have truly virtuous food. So they gave up and invented imaginary food. Now all your impossible standards can be met by eating food you invent with your mind. Any flavor, any portion, any ingredients, and 100% guaranteed virtuous, precisely because it doesn't exist. No calories, no fat, and best of all, no emissions. I can't believe it's not real. Virtue never tasted so good.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.